We're starting today a new topic, and that's called Mekalkel. And we begin with the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Hei Omid Beis. This is, I think, a great place to start the Sugya of Mekalkel. The Mishnah says, HaKorea B'chamoso, a man is angry, and he starts ripping. One of the 39 melachas listed on Daf Ayin Gimel is Meleches Korea. But in this case, he's ripping something from a perspective of anger. We have another case in the Mishnah. Ve, and often when you see that Vav, it means or, and that's, I think, appropriate here. So in modern Hebrew, we would say Vechen. The Vav means Vechen, and so too Al-Meso. A person rips his clothing as a result of the death of his dead. What does it mean, his dead? What does it mean, Meso? What's possessive over dead? Family, exactly. Now, one of the issues we're going to have to discuss is, what is family? Let's say he lost a cousin. Is that called a family? Or are we limited to those relatives who are identified in Parshas Emor as the seven categories of relatives for which a Kohen, in order to bury his dead, he would have to be metame himself, even though normally a Kohen is enjoined from tumah, from contact with the dead. But here he's obligated to bury his relative. So there are different circles of relatives. I know someone here told me he was learning Daf Yomi. If you remember, a week ago at Daf Yomi, they were talking about which relatives are disqualified to testify about their relatives. You know, first cousins and great nephews and so forth and so on. So here, the Mishnah so far is a little bit vague. The Sugya and the Gemara is going to have to really clarify, what does it mean, Al-Meso? Now, after the Mishnah gave us the example of Korea, it's very common for the Mishnah to then extrapolate and form and express a general rule that applies way beyond the confines of that first example. So we have 39 melachos. In the case of Korea, the Mishnah is going to establish that since he ripped something, that's called destructive, and therefore he's patur. And now the Mishnah is going to go ahead and give us a more universal principle that applies in all 39 melachos. V'chol ha-mekalkel in p'turim. And in any case of a melacha, if he's mekalkel, which literally means it's destructive, again, you can always have to figure out what constitutes something that's destructive. There's always going to be that gray area in the middle. Then he's pot. So it sounds like the concept of misaken, of being metaken something that means improving, is very essential to Shabbos. And the absence of that element of tikkun, let's go to the other extreme. Again, there may be a gray area in the middle. That's called mekalkel. When are you chayav for Shabbos? That's only if it's metaken. And when are you potter for Shabbos? That if it's mekalkel. And that applies kol ha-mekalkel. The Mishnah says, without exception, it applies straight across the board. Then the Mishnah sort of calms down a little bit and qualifies it. It says, ha-mekalkel al-menas letaken. What about a case where a person does an action which in and of itself would constitute a kilkul? It seems to be destructive, but almanas. What does almanas mean? Who can give me another word, a single word for almanas?
In order to.
No, one word in Lashon Kodesh. Kavana. Kavana. Kavana plays a major role in Shabbos. My intention. So almanas is another phrase that substitutes for intention. And here's intention, it was lesaken. Imagine the following situation. You have two letters that are written on a parchment, but you want to substitute another two letters. And you don't have enough room on the parchment. Or let's say they're part of a word, and you have to change a letter or two on the parchment. They've already been written. That would be a case of almanas lesaken, because obviously when you replace the old letters with the new letters, then your erasure, your mechika, was almanas lesaken. Or let's take, for example, you have stitches, and you think the stitches in the garment are not even. So you rip apart the garment, but only for the purpose of restitching it in a better way to improve the tefillah. In that case, again, it's a tikkun in the sense of, if I look in the mind of the person who's doing it, and I see that he's doing it in a way that prepares himself for something more productive or constructive, then that's called almanas l'saken. The problem here is that there's certain malachas that don't seem to have that element of almanas l'saken. For example, one of the 39 malachas that we're going to have to deal with as a separate topic is mechaber, which means to what?
Extinguish.
To extinguish. Yeah, when you extinguish something, where's the creative element of taking a light and extinguishing it? You may say, well, I need the darkness. That itself makes it into a tikkun. You might say that I don't want to burn up all my oil. That itself makes it into a tikkun. But in and of itself, when you define the case of a chaber, it sounds like it's a malach that by definition is a mekalkel. In the case of Korea, as we said before, if he's ripping something for some sort of constructive purpose, then that itself might make it into something creative or something constructive, so that even though the act itself, if I isolate it on an objective level, it's an act of kilkel, it's a kriya, but nevertheless, since it lays the ground, it's a preparatory stage for some sort of more constructive, I need to rip something that is, you know, inappropriate, it has to be removed so that I can recreate it, restitch it in a way that's improving it. That's called the almanas l'taken. And now there's something very interesting that we have to ask. Let's say you had two malachas. You have maleches korea and you have maleches tfira. One is ripping, and you're chai for that because you prepare the tfira, and the second malacha is tfira. It could be he never got around to tefira. You know, Shabbos ended, and during the course of Shabbos, before they made Avdol, he never did the tefira. But his kriya is a malacha unto itself, because he prepares the garment for tefira. The tefira, again, didn't have to take place during the course of Shabbos, but the kriya was a preparation for that tikkun of tefira. But what happens if these two malachos, kriya and tefira on the one end, on one end and the other hand, have two different shiurim? Each one has a different shiur. Every malach has its own shiur, a minimum amount that you have to do in order to be chayav. So let's say the shiur of kriya was to rip one stitch, but the shiur of tefira is to make two stitches. How would you define kfir al manas l'saken? So the Mishnah establishes shiuro kimisaken. In other words, we're going to define the shear of the malacha, in this case of kriya, which in and of itself would be destructive, it's a makalkel, by viewing it as a preparation for tefira. So if tefira is going to be the constructive element, then we're going to take the shear of tefira, which in this case is two stitches, that's the minimum you have to stitch up to be chai for tefira, and we're going to superimpose it upon kriya. We're going to say that kriya means you have to rip two stitches. Let's take the example of ksiva. So ksiva is the flip side of mechika. Mechika is one of the 39 malachas, erasing, and ksiva is another one of the 39 malachas. We know that the shear of ksiva is two osios. You're not chai for less than two letters. What would therefore, ipso facto, be the shear, the minimum shear for mechika? It's going to have to be what? Two osios. You have to erase two osios to prepare for the writing of two osios. Okay. At this point, my friends, we're not going to learn the rest of the Mishnah. That's not relevant to now. We're going to jump to the Gemara. That's five lines down from the top of the page. Ureminhu. Ureminhu means I have a contradiction from, in this case, a Mishnah to a Brisa. Sometimes Ureminhi means a contradiction from one Mishnah to another Mishnah. In this case, the Gemara is going to quote a Brisa, and the Brisa is going to tell us the exact opposite as the Mishnah. The Brisa says, HaKorea b'chamoso, ube'evlo, ve'almeso, chayav. Wait a second. We just finished saying that Korea is considered what? Mekalkel. And therefore, your potur. Now, in the same context, in the same scenario, the Mishnah says that Korea b'chamoso chayav. Now, it also says V'al Meso. That too appears in our Mishnah as one of the cases of Makalkia where you're part of her. And yet in the Brisa it says Al Meso Chayav. The only thing is, I have to admit that there's one word in this Brisa that we didn't see in the Mishnah, which is that Ube Evlo. It means in the context of his Avelus. There's a mitzvah of Avelus. So it could be that that would change the whole nature of the picture here. In other words, maybe what we're talking about is a mitzvah of Avelus. Otherwise, why did the Braisa add a word that doesn't appear in the Mishnah? Meaning, if I have a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa, what I'm going to try to do is read both texts very meticulously and see if maybe I can reconcile that contradiction by finding one discrepancy between the two texts. And in this case, the only word that I find which is discrepancy is the word ube'evlo. And if that be true, then maybe the key to unlock the mystery here as to why on one hand the Mishnah says you're potter and on the other hand the Braisa says you're chayav, it lies or it's inherent in the word be'evlo. Okay, so I'm just throwing that out there as food for thought. Let's just go through the Gemara a little bit further. The Gemara says that the Braisa adds another statement here. The afal pisha mechalas ha-shabbos. Now that we've established that you're chayav, now here's a very paradoxical situation. We're telling you be'evlo. Be'evlo means that you have a mitzvah of avelus. The mitzvah of avelus expresses itself in many different ways, but one of the ways that it expresses itself, which is most relevant to us, is called kriya. Kriya with an ayin, right? Now, the mitzvah of kriya applies within the framework of avelus as a separate mitzvah to render your garments. And here we have a paradox. On the one hand, he rendered his garment. Well, let's give him credit for that. That's a mitzvah avelus. But on the other hand, when did he render his garment? On Shabbos itself. And the Brice is of the opinion that by ripping his garment, he's chayav for violating Shabbos. What concept, my friends, should automatically appear on the radar screen here? Exactly, it's a mitzvah bab avera. In other words, you can't do a mitzvah through an avera. Let's say, for example, a person steals matzah. A person steals a sukkah. He throws you out of your sukkah and he decides he's going to sit in the sukkah. A person steals a Sefer Torah and he reads from the Sefer Torah. Those cases, all of which involve theft, here we're not talking about theft, we're talking about Shabbos, but nevertheless, what's common is that there's a violation of the Torah law. And oddly enough, he fulfilled the mitzvah by violating a Torah law. Again, we could ask ourselves the following question. Let's say he could have achieved his goal and fulfilled his obligation without violating the law. But let's say he has no option, and the only way he can violate, the only lulav that's accessible, that's available, is not really accessible. But if he steals it, he can fulfill his mitzvah of lulav. But that's the principle of mitzvah bab avera. So the perek in Shas, which addresses this issue, is the third perek of Masechta Sukkah regarding a stolen lulav. And there the Gemara has psukim in Malachi, that's one of the Nevi'im, which indicate that if you steal an animal and you bring it on the Mizbeach as a carbon, the carbon is possible. And why is that? Because of mitzvah bab avera. And the Gemara extrapolates from the case of carbon that was brought illegally because it was stolen and was brought as a carbon. The carbon is invalid. We can extrapolate from that as a universal principle that whenever you fulfill a mitzvah, but the access to the mitzvah was achieved through an avera, then the avera undermines the mitzvah. And if we apply that to this principle, to this case, I should say, the Braisa itself is bothered. How does he achieve his goal? His goal is to fulfill the mitzvah of avelus. And the kriya is part of the framework of avelus. And that's what motivates him. Great. He wants to fulfill the mitzvah avelus. But has he achieved that goal? Through violating Shabbos. So on the one hand, he's chayav for Shabbos. On the other hand, he fulfills the mitzvah avelus? Question mark. And the Gemara doesn't, the Braisa itself says, that's very strange. What happened to mitzvah bav avera? And the Braisa doesn't give us a real clear answer to this question, but it just says, afal pi shemachalas haShabbos, despite the fact that by ripping his garment on Shabbos, he has violated Melechah Shabbos, which would mean that if he did it b'shogeg, he has to bring a korban chatos. He did it b'mezid with Edom and Asra, he'd be chayv skila. Nevertheless, yotzi yudei kriya. Again, it's very funny because kriya is a nice mitzvah, but it doesn't shine a candle to chil Shabbos. You have a person, Chas Shalom, loses a close relative, and for whatever reason, he let's say even deliberately, he refuses to render his garment. Okay, that's a bittul essay, you know, he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah's essay, but this is a lot worse. He's mechalel es haShabbos. But in any event, bottom line, we don't know what this additional sentence in the Brisa, this, you know, this finale, this postscript in the Brisa is all about. Is it reflecting back on the beginning of the Brisa? Is the Brisa telling you maybe the reason why he's chayav for Shabbos is because he fulfills his mitzvah of Avelus? In other words, it was critical for the Brisa in order to justify its opening statement, namely that this kriya engenders a chiyuv Shabbos. It was critical to add that he fulfills the mitzvah of Avelus. Or perhaps the Brisa has two topics. It's a two-topical Brisa. The Brisa wants to know, number one, what's the deal as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, and we want to write a Simon and Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chayiv. And then the Brisa wants to address a question which is more of a Yoridea question: has he fulfilled his mitzvah of Avelus and Kriya? It's a little bit odd to find one Brisa in the same breath addressing two different worlds. It would be a lot, how shall I say, a lot more attractive conceptually if we would understand that the Brisa is adding an important point in order to reflect back on the Halach and Shabbos. But on the other hand, why would it be so? It is, when we're dealing with the question of whether he violated Shabbos and he's chayav for Shabbos, I don't see offhand why we have to enter into the question of mitzvah of Avera and raise the issue of whether or not he fulfilled his mitzvah of Avelus. But in any event, the Gemara says lo kash. I have no problem reconciling the apparent contradiction between the Mishnah and the Brisa. Why not? Ha b'meis di day, ha meis di alma. Okay. Now first we want to translate the words. And then we want to try to understand the words. I'm not sure which is a bigger challenge. So there's something called meis di day. Well, that's a funny kind of phrase. You know, usually you talk about an object that belongs to me. You say, it's the day, it's mine. I have possession, I have ownership. You don't talk about a dead body as mine, you know, but he says, meis di day. So Rashi explains that meis di day means that it's his close relative. Ha, but the Brisa, I'm sorry, that's the case of the Brisa. But ha, the case of the Mishnah, is b'meis di alma. Somebody died, but it's not his relative. Now, what's the difference, my friends, between meis di day and meis di alma?
Not chayav kriya.
The mitzvah of kriya, correct. So if it's meis di day, then you're chayav in the mitzvah of kriya. If it's meis di alma, you don't have a mitzvah of kriya. So it's fascinating. The Gemara is trying to explain, is he chayav for Melechah Shabbos in Korea, or is he not chayav? Is he chayav because it's constructive and it's a tikkun, or is he not chayav because it's a Melechah's kilkul? And the Gemara says, wait a minute, I have to ask myself a different question, and that question is going to answer the first question. You know, a good Jew always answers one question by asking another question. So what's my second question? Did he fulfill the mitzvah of Avelus? Or, let's put it this way, was he obligated to the mitzvah of Avelus? And the answer is, that's the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Brisa. The Mishnah is addressing a case of Meis the Alma, he's not obligated to the mitzvah of Avelus, and therefore Kriya is not a Kriya Shel mitzvah. On the other hand, the Brisa is addressing a case of meis di day, which means that if it was his close relative, he's obligated the mitzvah of Avelus, and therefore he's obligated the mitzvah of Kriya, and he's fulfilled the mitzvah of Kriya. That's supposed to explain to us, laniach et datenu, why is it that in the case of the Mishnah he's potur, and in the case of the Brisa he's chayav? So again, Rabbi, so you see where this overlap between Shabbos and Avelus. Anybody have a clue as to where we should go with that?
I think we have to look at our underlying halachos. I mean, Shabbos is time bound; it's at a specific period of time, and like the whole thing of Kriya, it's at a certain time. I mean, does anyone say anyway it has to be at this moment?
Well, there's a lechatchila and there's a b'di'avid. I mean, for that we'd have to learn Hilchos Avelus, but lechatchila, at the moment that he hears about the deceased, that's when he's chayav in Kriya. We have a minhag to delay it so that we do it in a more organized fashion, and we wait until before the what's called the mitzvah of hesped. But if, let's say, after the hesped and even after Shiva began, he failed to do the kriya, we would still obligate him to do kriya. But what I'm not understanding, Ben, is that's what I wanted to ask if we're on the same plane here. What is the relationship here? There's an intersect here, or what do they call it? An overlap between two halachas. We have one halach in Shabbos we want to know, is kriya a makalkel or is it betakin? I.e., is kriya mechayev you for melech Shabbos, or no, it's makalkel and it's potter. Now we have another issue. Is it meisti day or meisti alma? I.e., is it a chiyuv of kriya or is it not a chiyuv of kriya? Which seems to be offhand irrelevant to that discussion that addresses the laws of avelus. And then you have to decide, you have to enumerate a whole list of krovim, of relatives who obligate in kriya, and other people who are not in that level of krovim. Again, you may be very upset about their laws and so on, but that's not a mitzvah of kriya. What's the interface here between the two concepts? Dan, what would you say?
I have a question, rather.
Oh, I have a question. Okay. I'm looking for an answer. He's giving me a question. Yeah, you're throwing it back at me. Because I just finished saying a good Jew, instead of answering a question, asks a question. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm confused over the concept of chayav and patur in this case. You're chayav for the mitzvah, or you're chayav to bring a korban because you violated the mitzvah?
So wait, let's read the Brach.
Because I was learning...
What are we reading? We're reading the Braisa, or we're reading the...
In the Mishnah, it says Yipator,
right.
And the Braisa is the
says Chayav. So it says HaKorea B'chamoso U'be'evlo, right? V'al Meso, and it doesn't mention the fact that it's Shabbos. So that bothers Dan a lot. Okay, that's a good question. I don't have an answer to that question now. We'll leave it as an unanswered question. But the Gemara assumes up front that this Braisa is addressing the case of Shabbos. How do I know this? Uriminu. What's Uriminu? A contradiction. You in the Mishnah told me that HaKorea Mechamos Al Meso on Shabbos is Potu. The Braisa says HaKorea Al Chamos Al Meso Potu Echayav. That's a head-on collision. It must be that this Braisa, in the Gemara's understanding, is talking about a person who was Korea Al Meso on Shabbos. Since he was Korea on Shabbos, therefore the word Chayav here means that he's Chayav from Melech Shabbos. Now we have a clear understanding of the contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And that is Kriya a Meleches Mekalkel, or is it a Meleches Mesakin? And here we have a theory between the Mishnah and the Braisa. What's more challenging is trying to figure out the answer of the Gemara. How does the Gemara actually reconcile this contradiction? See, telling me the Mishnah is talking about what? About Korea Meis the Alma, and the Bryce is talking about Korea Meso. Good. That's very nice. You know, if my discussion for today was when is there a mitzvah of Kriya and when do you fulfill that obligation, that would be a very interesting distinction between Meis the Day and Meis the Alma. But that's not what the Gemara is trying to explain here. The Gemara is trying to justify the fact that the Mishnah says for this Kriya you're a potter, and the Bryce says that for this Kriya you're Chayav. Jeff, what do you want to say? No answer? What makes something makalkel and what makes something metake?
The kavana. Almana, no?
Excellent. The kavana plays the role. We saw it already in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says almanas lesake. Now, here's my second question. Let me introduce my question, if you don't mind, with a little teal. You know, we're going to take a little bit of a digression here. On Yom Tov, I'm allowed to do what kind of malacha as opposed to Shabbos?
Carrying.
No. What kind of malacha? Carrying is one example. Bishol is another example. But what's the general concept? That's called Ochel Nefesh. Okay. Ochel Nefesh means that I want it for eating purposes. Again, there are a lot of complicated issues here, but let's leave it at that superficial level, because that's enough for me today. What is this intention for eating purposes? Is that an intention which is just a reality, meaning if we were to do an analysis of this man's mindset, we would come to the conclusion that he's cooking for the sake of eating. Or it's not enough to check out, if somebody could do me a favor, just open the door for a second. Rabosai, can I trouble you to close the door over there? Rabbi Wexler.
Close the door.
If they can close the door to the office.
Close the door.
Yo, great. Thank you so much. Okay, then. So, here's what I want you to focus on. Obviously, in the general case of a person who cooks for the sake of eating, you could say his kavana is for the sake of eating. And that's called ochel nefesh. But my question is, what happens if that kavana is a kavana which is absolutely disqualified not to be recognized in the halachic universe, if I could use that term? For example, let's say a person would cook basar b'chalav. He's not allowed to eat basar b'chalav. So what do I say? Is he chayav for cooking? Is he not chayav for cooking? Has he violated yontif? Has he not violated yontif? On the one hand, his intention was to eat it. If he eats it, we can give him 39 lashes, right? But his intention, nobody could deny it, was for the sake of eating. On the other hand, the halacha doesn't recognize such a thing. There's no such thing as cooking meat and milk together for the sake of eating. You're not allowed to prepare milk and meat in a cooking situation for the sake of eating. Why am I throwing this out? What I mentioned to you is a sugya in Masech the Beitza. And the Gemara vacillates back and forth. I'm using this, as we say, l'saber to ozen. Imagine the case of kavana for, in a makalkel situation, for the sake of tikkun. How do I define, what are the rules or the standards that govern kavana l'shem tikkun? Al menas l'take. Is it just a reality check? You know, is he interested in doing tikkun or is he not? Or do we look at it from a halachic perspective? Meaning al pi din, it's called a tikkun. And what do you see from this gemara? What's critical here? What determines a kavana of tikkun? Exactly, the halacha. If al pi din, it's called a tikkun, then he's going to be chayav because that transforms the malacha from a maleches makalkel to a maleches tikkun. The fact that he is ripping his garments and in his mind, you know, he's doing this, that, and the other thing, that we don't recognize that. That's not called a tikkun. The tikkun here has to be recognized by the halacha itself. In this case, when I say recognized by the halacha, as opposed to the case of Bishul Basar B'chalav, where it was le'isur, here it's le'what? Le'mitzvah. Le'chiv. So if I have a kavana for a mitzvah, that itself converts my destructive act into a constructive act. The halacha steps in and looks at this act of kriya and defines it as constructive. Why is it constructive? I mean, after all, hey, he's destroying the beggar. But the answer is, what makes it into tikkun? Again, I want you to say it in my language, if you don't mind. Kiyum mitzvahs avelus. It's the kiyum mitzvahs avelus that transforms an act of kilkul into an act of tikkun. If this be the case, I can answer two questions that we raised here today. Number one, why is the Braisa going off on a tangent in inverted commas here? All of a sudden, the Braisa has to tell me, well, even though he violated Shabbos, nevertheless, he still fulfilled his mitzvah of avelus. And come up with an answer to the why doesn't this undermine the principle of mitzvah baba veira? Ayin shom, we'll come back to that in Mitzvah Shev in a few minutes. But leaving that question on the side, what was the brisa? You know, a brisa should be pedagogic. You know, don't talk to me about mitzvahs avelus in the middle of a discussion about mitzvah Shabbos. But the answer is, do you know why he's chayiv in Shabbos? Says the brisa. What's the answer?
Wasn't a mitzvah.
No, just the opposite rule. Again, read the Braisa again. The Braisa says he's chayef. And now I'm adding the word why. Again, the Braisa doesn't have the word why.
Okay.
And the Braisa answers, because Yafal Pisha Machalas a Shabbos, Yotza Yedei Kriya.
Worked.
Right, it's very interesting. He got a Kiyum Mitzvahs Kriya. Meaning, the Braisa is not just giving you added information to enhance your general knowledge as a scholar, that he doesn't have to repeat the Kriya, you know, in order to be Yotza the Mitzvah Kriya. No, that's not what the Braisa is interested in. The Braisa is well focused, it's not distracting. This is not a Braisa that has ADD. It's not on Ritalin, this Braisa. This Braisa is telling you that you're chayav on Shabbos. You know why? After all, you ripped the garment. That's a makalkel. The answer is because you obtained a kiyum mitzvahs avelus. That kiyum mitzvahs avelus is the clincher that makes it into a mitake. And that's why you're chayav on Shabbos. That's question number one that we've answered. Now, question number two, the Gemara says, Ha b'meis di day, Ha b'meis di alma. The Bryce is talking about your own mace. And that's why the Bryce says Yechayev. Yeah. The Mishnah is addressing the case of meis di alma, and that's why your partner, the answer is, the Bryce makes it into Matikun, because since it's meis di day, therefore what does he obtain? A kiyum mitzvah savelus, the kiyum mitzvah savelus converts it or upgrades it into a matakin. The Mishnah on the other hand is addressing a case of meis di alma. There is no mitzvah avelus. If there's no mitzvah avelus, and there's no kiyum, then let's look at the dry cut action and its results, namely kriya, and it's mekalkel, and therefore your partner. So we have a situation of what I call Haba HaTalia, two different worlds of halacha that are interdependent. And what makes them interdependent? That the kiyum mitzvah itself, which is halacha anchored deep, deep in Hilchos Avelus, that generates a metaken and transforms an act of kilkul into an act of tikkun. Tremendous chiddush here. I would have said that Shabbos should be analyzed from the perspective of the universe. Let's look at it in philosophical terms. You know, God created the world, and then He took a rest on Shabbos. Let's look at it from a physical perspective. The man did an act of destruction. This garment was worth $10. Now it's worth zilch. Who wants to buy a rented, you know, ripped up garment? Again, maybe he'll say somebody will pay $1 for it. He'll take it to a tailor, you know, and he'll reconstruct it. The law in Avelis is, by the way, once it's kriyal meso, you don't reconstruct a garment. So anyway, it's not worth that much on the market. That's destructive. Comes over to the Gemara and says something unbelievable. I'm in total shock. That forget about the physical destruction on the garment. Let's look at his halachic kiyum. And paradoxically, he violates Shabbos and has a kiyum of a mitzvah avelus. And it's counterintuitive. I would have said, how could you obtain a kiyum of avelus and kriya by violating the Shabbos? And what happened to the principle of mitzvah bav avir? So here I want to make two comments. Comment number one is that maybe this revolution, so to speak, of this sugya, which I don't think appears anywhere else in Shas, can be understood. We can sort of reduce the tension here a little bit. Ben mentions Kavana. In Hilchos Shabbos, Kavana is critical. Where do we see such a thing? There are many, many proofs. I'm just going to mention one or two. We have a concept called misasik. Here in this room, we've been talking a lot about it over the past 2 weeks. Misasik all comes down to the question of kavana. He thought that he was cutting something that is detached from the ground. Little did he know, he had no intention of cutting something that's mechubar lekarka, that's actually attached to the ground. But he doesn't even have to bring a carbon as a shogeg normally does. He thought he was cutting down the the figs on the western side. He cut off the figs inadvertently on the eastern side. He is potter b'din misasik, at least according to Shmuel. We have a principle of kavana that plays a critical role with regard to Melech HaShabbos. Ask yourself the question, well, are you doing something that benefits you? You seem to be destroying something. If I would take a karate chop, if I knew a little karate and I broke this table, then that's destructive. Again, you might say, well, you know, I impressed the Olam over here. Wow, Burson has a black belt in karate, right? Yeah, but I don't know if that would do it, because that's a destructive act. But when the mitzvah of the Torah commands me to do that act, if my intention is to fulfill that mitzvah, that's not destructive. Again, my gain here is not physical, it's not in the material world, but nevertheless I gained something tremendous in the spiritual world. I've created a mitzvah. You know, I give a shiur here on Shabbos an hour before Mincha, during the summer months. And we've been talking a lot about what is the power of a mitzvah. You know, people, we don't even begin to understand what the power of a mitzvah. I mean, Chazal say that schar mitzvah v'hai al malek, if you took all the pleasures of the entire universe in a physical form, it wouldn't shine a candle to one mitzvah, the reward that you get in the next world. I mean, we don't have a concept of what the power of a mitzvah is, what it does cosmologically. This man was mikayim a mitzvah. But now we get to that second question. A kiyum a mitzvah? As we say in my mamalosh, that's a knacker mitzvah. You do kriya on Shabbos? You violate Melech HaShabbos? And for that you get brownie points? That's going to be considered a kiyum a mitzvah? What about mitzvah baba feira? So here, my friends, before we get into Rashi and Tosis, just as an introduction, I want to mention a famous Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says the following. What happens if I need to obtain a lulav? Two cases. Case number one, the only way I can get access to this lulav is by stealing your lulav. Case number two is the only way I can get access to the lulav is by carrying the lulav from one rishus to another rishus. Let's say it was Shabbos of Sukkot. Okay, today we have Gzeirah D'Rabbah. Okay, let's talk about another case. Let's say. Okay, it's hard to come up with a case because we're so used to Gzeirah D'Rabbah.
Cutting it from the tree.
A lulav that's orla.
No. What I mean to say is he carries from one rishus to the other in order to fulfill a mitzvah. Again, if you don't mind, just because time is of the essence here. Imagine before the Gzeirah of Rabbah. Before the Gzeirah of Rabbah, what we have is a mitzvah of lulav on Shabbos. If Sukkot falls on Shabbos, I think maybe this year it does, no? I know Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, I don't remember. Oh no, Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, it can't be. Yeah, so Sukkot overlaps with Shabbos, and now he has access to a lulav in Rishus HaRabim, or let's say he's in one Rishus HaYochid, he has to go into a different Rishus HaYochid through Rishus HaRabim, so he's got to violate Moleches Hotzah in order to carry the lulav from one Rishus to the other. And his purpose is to shake the lulav. So you have the two cases. In the first case, he steals someone's lulav in order to fulfill the lulav. In the second case, he carries it from one Rishus to another in order to get access to the lulav. So Yerushalmi says that in the first case, he's not Yotzi the Mitzvah of Lulav. That's called Mitzvah Bava Vera. In the second case, he is Yotzi the Mitzvah of Lulav. Okay then? Jeremy, can I trouble you just for 1 second, the other Jeremy, to open the door? If I could just maybe ask a favor here. Okay, so now we have the Yerushalmi. Now let's try to analyze the Yerushalmi, right? We have two cases. One case where he steals the lulav, and the other case where he carries the lulav. In the first case, he's not Yotze, it's Mitzvah Bava Vera. And in the second case, he is Yotze, and it doesn't, the rule of Mitzvah Bava Vera doesn't apply. Why? I'm not happy. What's the difference between the two cases?
Isn't there a third element? You can only shake a lulav that's yours. Stealing doesn't make it yours.
That's a good point. But I had something else in mind, Ben. Maybe we'll pick up your point a little bit later. Every mitzvah has an object to it, correct? Every mitzvah has the object to it. We can always raise the following question. Does the Avera change the object? Again, not physically, but al pidin. Mitzvah baba ver means that the heftzah shel mitzvah, the object that I need for the mitzvah, is an object that has avera inherent into it. The avera is chal in the heftzah. How would that apply, perhaps, to explain the difference between case A and case B? Where he steals the lulav, or he carries the lulav?
Well, it's the gavra. He, as a gavra, is moving.
Which one is the gavra? The second one. Yeah, but what about the first case? The first case is gzela. What happens once a person steals an object?
The object is tainted.
Correct. The object itself becomes a chefza hagozel. It's a stolen object. How do I know this? Obviously from the law of mitzvah baba avera, that's what we're studying now, you can't steal an animal and then bring it as a carbon. The animal is called a behemah gzula. And a behemah gzula is excluded from the mizbeach. But it goes beyond that. A heftah gozel generates new mitzvahs. That's called veheshiv, it's like zela shagozel. An object that's stolen is a heftah gozel. If it goes up in value, paradoxically, who gets that increment? The Gazlan himself. Why? Because it's a Heftzah Gozel. Wait a minute. It belongs to Joe. I stole it from him. It went up in value, and I, the Gazlan, should gain from that? What am I, a Chote Niskar? But the Gemara says it becomes a Heftzah Gozel. The Gazlan now attains and establishes possession and ownership rights over the Heftzah Gozel to such an extent that the original owner could no longer be Magdish it. I don't even know if he could sell it. It's a Heftzah Gozel. There are many, many dinim that apply to a Heftzah Gozel. The most prominent of them is what we're learning now, that a Heftzah Gozel is possible a mitzvah, and therefore Lulav HaGozel cannot be used for the mitzvah of Lulav. It becomes a mitzvah Bobavir. But if he carries a Lulav from one mishus to the other, did anything change as far as the Lulav is concerned? The personality of the Lulav has not changed, and therefore it's not mitzvah Bobavir. So here I ask myself, what is the mitzvah of Kriya? Is it the act of ripping as sort of like an expression of mourning and grief? Or is it creating a chefza, an object that is karua, that is ripped? Is the mitzvah the action? It's like walking with a lulav from one rishus to the other. Or is the mitzvah inherent in the garment? I have to create a garment that's karua. And what would be the answer based on what we learned today? It's in the gav. It's a maisa kriya. I couldn't care less about the garment. The garment is just there as the backdrop, as the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah. The mechanism to fulfill the mitzvah. Excellent. But the mitzvah itself is the kriya. Like what we were saying before about carrying a lulav. Carrying a lulav doesn't change the lulav. Mitzvah baba ver means you have an object which you want to use for a mitzvah. Here, the object is secondary. The object is not part and parcel of the essential mitzvah. The object is just a mechanism, as Ben points out, in order to set up the mitzvah. But the mitzvah is the act of kriya. And the Gemara comes up with an unbelievable chiddush. The man rips his garments on Shabbos, and it's a kiyum mitzvah kriya. Why? Because mitzvah bob avera is only when the object itself takes on a new personality, when the avera is inherent in the object. In the case of kriya, the Torah doesn't ask you to take an object and use it. The Torah tells you to do an action, and the object, in this case the beged, is just a victim, so to speak. It's just a mechanism by which he can achieve kriya. He's got to do kriya on a beged. Okay, now I want to look at Rashi. Rashi says, one second. Okay, just one second. Before we do Rashi, the Gemara says the following. V'ha mesel ketani. Let's go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah says HaKorea b'chamaso v'al meso. What does that mean, al meso? Al meso seems to imply that what? It's his karov. Meaning he's chayav in the midst of kriya. And if he's chayav in the midst of kriya, then l'chora, we should say that he's chayav in Shabbos, because that itself, the midst of kriya, should engender a tikkun. So the Gemara answers, Li'olam the meistide ubahanach the lav b'nei avelus ninhu. There are relatives and there are relatives. There are relatives that are written up in Parshas Emor, as we mentioned earlier, and they their death generates a chiyuv kriya. And then there are relatives, which is also meisti day, but nevertheless there's no mitzvah kriya, and if there's no kiyuv mitzvah kriya, then there's no way of transforming the mekalkel into what? Into Misaki. Then the Gemara says something very interesting. I chacham hu, there's a law of kriya on the death of a chacham, is chiyuve mechayev, he's chayev in kriya, even though he's not a relative. Desanya chacham shemes hakol krovav. When a chacham dies, everyone's related to the korov. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Hakol krovav salka daitach? Just because he's a chacham, he's a wise person, therefore you're related to him. Ella, ema hakol kikrovav. Just like in the case of a korov, you're chayev in the mitzvah of kriya. So too in the case of someone who's like a korov, namely a chacham, you're chayev in the mitzvah of kriya. The Gemara goes on to say, hakol korim olav, hakol choltsim olav. Hakol Mavrim, okay, these are all dinim in Avelus. And the question is, what about the case of a Chacham, Lo Tzricha, Delav Chacham, who, the reason why he's not Chayev is because he's not a Chacham. Okay, I'm trying to sort of fast forward to the part of the sugya that's most relevant for us today. The Gemara asks, Odom Kosher, who, Chiyuve Mechayve, Desanya, Mipnei Ma, Mason, Bonav, Mnosav, Shal Odom, Shen Krova, Shen Ketanim, Kedei, Sheyivkev, Isabel, Al Odom Kosher. It sounds like there's a mitzvah of Avelus even on another Jew who's not a Chacham. And the Gemara says, Kedei, Sheyivkev, Vyivke. Okay, he has to be upset about the loss of an Odom Kosher, but there's no absolute Chiyuv of what? Of kriya. Then the Gemara goes off into a little tangent here, and I got it to about kol abochel adam kosher mochlin lo al kol avanosav. Fine. So that's a very good thing. Now the Gemara says v'idakoy b'shas yitzias neshama chiyuve mechayve. If he's there at the time of the loss of life, when the person passes on, then, even if he's not related to him, there is a chiyuv of kriya. Chiyuv emechayv means he's chayv in kriya. Tesanya, we learned in the Braisa, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, ha'omed al ames b'shas yitzias neshama. If a person is there when somebody dies, is chayv lekroa, there's a chiyuv kriya. Ha'lamazet dome l'sefer Torah shenisrafa. The law is, if somebody, heaven forbid, witnesses the burning of a Sefer Torah, he has to do kriya. And the same thing applies to the loss of an Adam Kosher who spent his life, or part of his life, studying Torah. So the Gemara says, Lo Tzricha, our Mishnah, when it's talking about Korea al Meso B'Shabbos, the Lo Koy B'Shas Yitzias Neshama, he wasn't present at the time that this individual passed on, and then it depends on whether it's his karov or a chacham. If it's his karov or if it's a chacham, then he's chayev in kriya. But if it's an adam kosher, then he's not chayev in kriya. Therefore, it's a makalkel situation. Tenach, the Gemara says, meso ella chamoso achamoso kasha. We have a double contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. We had one contradiction about the case of Korei al Meso, and that we resolved. Our Mishnah is talking about an Odom Kosher. The Braisa is talking about a Korov or a Chacham. But there's another steer, another contradiction here, because the Mishnah says al chamaso, if he rips his garment because of anger, that's called makalkal and he's potter. The Brisa says al chamaso, he is chayav kasha. Gemara says chamaso chamaso nami lo kasha. How could I resolve that contradiction between the two cases of chamaso? Ha Rabbi Shimon, ha Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to reconcile it by introducing a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon puts all the emphasis on kavana, and Rabbi Yehuda says that even in the absence of kavana, he's still chai. So we'll talk a bit in Mitzvah Shem in just a minute about the case that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are arguing about. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Malacha Shenetzrich Lagufa, even in the absence of his Kavana, Chayav Aleh. And therefore, we understand very well that our Brisa, which is talking about Korea Al Chamaso, and he has no interest in improving this garment. He's just he's ripping the garment. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it'll be Chayav. According to Rabbi Shimon, it'll be Potter. Ha, Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. The Amar Malacha Shenetzrich Lagufa Potter Aleh. Meaning that the Kavana element is absolutely critical. And without Kavana, you're not Chayav. And here, in the case of Koreal Chamoso, we don't have a Kavana that would make it into a Metaken, and therefore he's Chayav. So what is the Gemara saying now? Is the Gemara saying now that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if Kavon is not an element, that you're always going to be Mechayev, you're going to be Chayev for Mekalkel?
What's the difference between Korea Mechmasu and Mekalkel?
Right, if Rabbi Yehuda accepts the principle that Mekalkel is Potur, then Korea Mechmasu should be Potur. Why does the Bais say he's Chayev? So the Gemara says, well, Rabbi Yehuda, Ultimalach Shen Tzrich Lugufa, Chayev Ali. Okay, so what does that mean? Minus the element of Kavana, you could be Chayev according to whom? According to Rabbi Yehuda, correct? So does that mean that every Mekalkel is considered a Metaken? And why is that? Because he has what? Somebody might want to make me feel good, so they also left their phone on. Okay. That's the story of the Chofetz Chaim, you know, where he spills the wine. So what happens over here? So let's take a look at Rashi. Okay then? Rashi, Dibur HaMaskel HaRab Yehuda. Can you find that, Rashi? It's kind of like smack in the middle of the page. If you see Tosis Dibur HaMaskel Lo Tzricha, and you draw a line across, then drop a few lines. HaRab Yehuda. So Rashi says, Umeso Ameso Hachinami, and once we introduce Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, then Meso Ameso Hachinami Havimotzi Literutze. In other words, if you are omitting the element of Kavana according to Rabbi Yehuda, then it should come out that every Mekalkel should be Chayav according to Rabbi Yehuda. So then, we didn't really have to rack our brains to reconcile the case of Korel Meso, why the Brisa says Yechayev, as opposed to the Mishnah. The answer is the Brisa is authored by and reflects the Shita of Yehuda. In that case, Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need his Kavana, and you can therefore be Mechayev him even without his Kavana. So why did the Gemara, in the first stage, have to introduce the distinction between Meis Di Dei and Meis Di Alma? Was he Chayv in the Mitzvah Kriya? Was he not Chayv in the Mitzvah Kriya? Why not just say that since this Brisa reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says Korea Mechamoso, if he rips because of his anger, he's Chayv, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda would say if he rips on his mess, he's also Chayv. So Chinami Avi Motzi L'Terutze, Rashi says the Gemara could have offered the same exact answer. El Meikara initially, what the Gemara wanted to say is that we don't have to differentiate between the Brisa and the Mishnah by saying this one is that Tana and this one reflects a different Tana. It's all one Tana, just that this one was Korea al Meso and this one's Korea al Meis the Alma. However, Lo Metukma, The Gemara finally realizes that we don't have that luxury. There's no way of joining the Braisa and the Mishnah under one author, because if there's one author, then we'll never understand why Korei al Chamoso is Chayav in the Braisa. The answer is we have to introduce Rabbi Yehuda. Now, once we introduce Rabbi Yehuda, we already have another answer to the question of Al-Mesa. Why in the Braisa Yechayev Al-Mesa? Because Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why Yechayev B'chamosa. Do malach shen tzich l'gufahi kimotzi es ha-meis l'kovro. Okay? So what does this mean? Kimotzi es ha-meis l'kovro. So let's get back to the basic machlokas here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. There's a malacha called Hotzah. Now he has a dead body, and he can't tolerate living in the house with the dead body, for whatever reason. So he takes the dead body out of the house on Shabbos, from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. Rabbi Shimon says, Yopotah. Rabbi Yehuda says, Yechayev. So why does Rabbi Shimon say, Yopotah? That's called a malacha shen tzrich l'gufa. Normally, when I do a malacha tzrich l'gufa in the case of Hotzah, I'm very eager that the object be relocated. Here, in this case of Motzias Ames, he's not interested in relocating the object. He's just interested in getting the object out of its place. He wants to have a house without a mess in it. So Rav Shimon says in such a case, he doesn't have kavana for the Malach of Shabbos, because the Malach of Shabbos in the case of Otzah is Hanocha, to place it down in a very specific place. That's where I want it to be located.
If you were moving it to get it closer to the kever, so you have to do less work or something, then that would
excellent.
Be
excellent. Yeah. Jeremy points out that let's say he wants to bring it to the kever, that would be Malachas Otzah with the Tzricha L'Gufi as a kavana for the Malach.
Right.
Comes along Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's irrelevant. As long as he has the basic Havana, meaning he wants to take this mess out of Rishus HaYochid and put it down in Rishus HaRabim, I don't have to enter into the question as to why he wants it out of here and why he wants it over there. That's the situation that he finds himself in. Meaning, in order to achieve his goal of making sure that the house is free of this mess, he has to locate it out there. He doesn't want it to be there necessarily, he just doesn't want it to be here. Says Rabbi Yehuda, that's enough. That's considered enough of a kavanah. So again, I wouldn't say that Rabbi Yehuda completely ignores the requirement of kavanah. Rabbi Yehuda is just whittling down the requirements of kavanah. Rabbi Shimon says in order to have kavanah, not only does he have to have a general kavanah that he wants this malacha, but he has to have a more specific malacha, kavanah. He wants the malacha for a purpose. And what is that purpose? That purpose is Hotzah. Namely, to place it down and relocate it in a new makom. Says Rabbi Shimon, that general kavanah is not sufficient. I need, on top, to boot a specific kavanah. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, no, you're chayef for malach ha-shen etzrich l'gufa. In other words, as long as you have this general kavana, that you want this malacha to be done, albeit not for the same purpose of the classical hotzah, which again is defined by the Mishkan, not because I want to relocate the object, but in my situation, I find it absolutely necessary to take it out of here, put it over there, that kavana is sufficient. So the Gemara says, if that be the case, then if we require, in the case of Mekalkel, some sort of tikkun, because you're not chayv for Mekalkel, so your kavana for tikkun is required, the question is, how far, how demanding is that tikkun? According to Rav Shimon, it's going to be a real, all-encompassing, demanding kavana. We have to reach up to the standards of kavana. When do we have kavanah? That's in the case where a person is going to restitch this garment and improve it because he has to rip out certain stitches. But in this case, korei mechamoso, he's not going to restitch the garment. There's nothing wrong with the garment. It's purely destructive. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and he says, wait a minute. There is an element of kavanah here. He wants the kriya. Why does he want the kriya mechamoso? What does Michamoso mean? He's angry. And if he's angry, he has to let out his anger. So that Michamoso is a low ebb minimum Kavana. Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm a minimalist. All I need is the minimum amount of Kavana. That's enough to supply Kavana, and I'm Chayav. Rabbi Shimon says, no, I need the maximum Kavana. He's a maximist. And the maximum Kavana means I want the Malacha the way it was done in the Mishkan. The way it was done in the Mishkan, it was Kriya for the purpose of restitching and improving the garment. My Kriya is only to let out my anger. But you could go even further than this. Let's talk about negative and positive. One malach is motivated by a kavana to do something positive. The other malach is motivated by a kavana to get rid of something negative. Like, let's say, for example, in the classical case of malach shen tzrich legufa in kibui, I can't tolerate the light. I need darkness. Rabbi Shimon says, you're potter for extinguishing the candle. Rabbi Yehuda says, you're chayav. Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the malach was thrust upon you because the nair was there and it's giving light where you need darkness, you have to get rid of this candle. If you have to get rid of this candle, that's enough of a kavana l'shem malacha, even though the real purpose and the motivation of it is to remove something. In the other case, where he... according to the opinion of whom? Of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, a kavana for malacha has to be a choice of a malacha that I would do under any circumstances. I benefit, I gain from the malacha, not because I have to get rid of something negative. So, for example, if I can't tolerate the mess in the house, Rabbi Shimon is going to call that a malacha shen tzrich legufa. I cannot allow the situation to go on as is. So, in order to be masalik, to remove this negative factor, that's what motivates me. Says Rabbi Shimon, that's not kavana for a malacha. Here too, says Rabbi Yehuda, I don't care. Why are you motivated? Why are you motivated to take the mess out? You want to be masalik, you want to remove yourself from a negative situation. Says Rabbi Yehuda, that kavana is considered, qualifies as a kavana samalach and therefore yechai. I want to extinguish the fire because I can't tolerate the light of the fire. That itself is enough of a kavana, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to constitute a chiyuv. Why do I want to rip my garment? Because I want to get rid of what? My anger. If I want to get rid of my anger, then Rav Shimon is going to say that's a malacha shein hatzricha legufa and yipater. Rav Yehuda will insist that's a malacha hatzricha legufa and yechayev. Or say better, according to Rav Yehuda, even though it's a malacha shein hatzricha legufa, you're still chayev. Why? Because it doesn't matter, I don't care, I don't have to go into a whole psychological analysis. Why do you want the malacha? It's because you want to rid yourself of some pest, of something negative, or you have a positive motivation. It's irrelevant. As long as you want the malacha, you intend to do the malacha, you're chayav, that's Rabbi Yehuda. Now we get to the ratio. Meso a meso. Just 1 second, I just want to see if I understand what I'm saying. Meso a meso. Okay. So meso a meso. Why is it that Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayav? And the Chacham say your pot. So why does the Mishnah say your pot and the Brice say Chayv? The Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shimon, and the Brice is authored by Rabbi Yehuda. So let's say it this way: a person Nebuch sustains a loss. He wants to express his grief. How does he express his grief? By ripping his garments. Forget about everything that we discussed before, whether it's a kiyum mitzvah, it's not a kiyum mitzvah, that's irrelevant. According to Rav Shimon, we have here a classical case of malach shen tzrich legufa. If not for the fact that somebody died, I would not be rendering my garments. I am in a situation where I have to remove a state of quenching my feelings about the grief. I have to somehow give expression to my grief. If I have to give expression to my grief, that's a situation that's thrust upon me against my will. It's not a motivation that I would have looked for lichatchila, and therefore it's a malacha shen tzrich legufa. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says yechayev for malacha shen tzrich legufa, then in order for him to express his grief, he has to render his garments. That itself makes it into a maleches tikkun. He only got into that situation because it was thrust upon him against his will, and now he has to find some way of expressing his grief. It doesn't matter. That's enough of a kavana for purpose of malach. Yeah, Jeremy, go ahead.
So just the tearing the kalkel without the chamaso, it's like takes away the kavana?
according to who, Reb Shimon? What again, just if you don't mind, so I can focus, what case are we dealing with? Korea al Chamoso, and he's Chayv or he's Potter?
And
are you in the Mishnah or are you in the Brice? The Mishnah says Korea al Chamoso, you are Potter. And the Brice says Korea al Chamoso, you're Chayv.
That says the Brice, where he says you're Chayv.
Oh.
He says you're Chayv.
Right.
So that's still different than Makalkal because it has that added dimension of Kavana from the Chamasa that he's trying to accomplish.
In other words, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, in our definition of Kavana, this is enough of Kavana, meaning he's trying to rid himself of this situation which his anger is bottled up inside of him, then if it is a Kavana, that makes it into Mitake. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda recognizes that as a valid kavana to generate a chiyuv Shabbos means that halachically this is considered a tikkun. The fact that I want to get rid of this terrible situation of anger and I can only find a way of expressing my anger by ripping my garments, that itself makes it into a meleches tikkun. Mashenkin, according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds that in order to have a kavana, you need something positive. That you were motivated to do something, to create a situation. It's not that it was thrust upon you and there's a pest in the room. Right? So what would be, for example, if I would kill a serpent? Correct? Let's say, forget about that. Let's say I want to capture a serpent. Okay? So why do I capture the serpent? So if I'm a zookeeper, because I need to put the serpent behind a, what do you call it, a cage, right? Or whatever you call it. And therefore, I enhance my... So that's one way. That's a positive way. I'm out there snake searching. Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
If anyone's looking for a job, I heard about a zoo that's looking for a snake capture. Oh, no. Anyway, I'm just kidding. But the other way of learning it is, why am I capturing this snake? Because I don't want the snake to bite me. I can't kill the snake, but I could trap the snake. So that would be a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon would say that, look, if you're only getting rid of the snake because it exists as a dangerous attacker, then this was a situation that was thrust upon you. That doesn't constitute kavana. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, I don't care why you're capturing the snake. Rabbi Shimon would agree and admit that you're chayev if you're capturing the snake to put it in the cage in the zoo, because that's a positive, and that's called the Melechus Tzedo, one of the 39 Melechus. So Rabbi Shimon, you should agree with me that even if his motivation is to capture the snake so it doesn't bite anybody and it's no longer harmful, that also is a kavanas Melechus. Says Rabbi Shimon, no. In such a case, he's not out there snake hunting. He doesn't want to fill up his zoo with snakes. He's out there catching snakes in order to protect the security of the people around. That's a negative situation where he's trying to remove a pest. That's called a malacha shena tzricha legufa. The chamaso here, or the avelus on a psychological level, is viewed and defined as a negative situation that's thrust upon you. You didn't seek out this chamaso. You didn't seek out this avelus. So now, whether or not this kavana is something valid, and if it's valid, I can view it as a constructive tikkun, amanas letaken, that's going to depend again on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So again, Rabbos, I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone for coming. Sure. We have a lot of new faces here.